Department of Anthropology at a university, and I've pretend to some maturity. About 2 years ago, she phoned me. I live in California. She said, Maya, you should have come to that conference. It was fantastic in the West Indies. She said the workshops were great, the seminars were great. It was just fabulous. But the best of all was this speech by Elaine Jackson. So I said, I don't know Elaine Jackson. Who is she? She said, oh, yes, you do. We met her one time in Long Island. And so I asked her, what does she look like? She said, well, she's short, about our age, kind of stocky. I asked her, is she black or white? She said, she's black. I asked her, what color is she? There was this long pause. She said, well, she's not as, but more than, but. And I realized as close as we had been and still are, as much love as we've shared between ourselves and trust, that Connie could not describe me if my life or hers depended upon it in terms of my color. So this poem is to help any of you who might find yourselves in this situation. I suggest that you memorize white Americans, memorize some of these phrases, descriptions, so that when you describe a friend, a black friend, you can use one of these. And if you have no black friends, go out and make some immediately. Have you dug the spill of Sugar Hill? Cast your gems on this sepia thrill. Brown sugar lassie, caramel treat, honey gold baby sweet enough to eat. Peach-skinned girly, coffee and cream, chocolate darling out of a dream. Walnut tinted, cocoa brown, pomegranate lip, pride in town. Rich cream colored, plum tinted black. Feminine sweetness is not Harlem's lack. From the glow of the quince to the blush of the rose, persimmon bronze, cinnamon toes. Blackberry cordial, Virginia Dare wine. All those colors flavor Harlem of mine. Walnut or cocoa, let me repeat. Caramel, brown sugar, a chocolate treat. Molasses taffy, coffee and cream. Licorice, clove, cinnamon, a honey brown dream. Ginger, wine gold, persimmon, blackberry. All through the spectrum, Harlem girls vary. So if you want to know the rainbows, beauty and sweet thrill, stroll with me down fine, delicious Sugar Hill. Yes? Did you remember some? Are you going to remember some of those? I hope. It's really important. Especially the young black women and men. You have a legacy so rich, so incredible. It is so incredible. I'm talking, my dear, please. So incredible. It's so important to you. Be aware of it. In fact, you know that a number of people for a number of centuries have paid dues that have not been written down in history books. And you are the end result of all the lashing and the pain and the crying of your great-great-grandmother and great-great-grandfather, of the ship, of the slave ship, of all that, of the working under duress, under conditions that would make Alex Haley's roots look like a old Nancy Drew and the Fireside Girls. And you are the end result of all those people, you, You are it. If they could stand in front of you now and say, so you are what it's all about. You are it, is it? You are it, what are you doing? It is also true of the Europeans. Many of the people, of your people, came from places in Europe which were so, where the earth was so overworked that people had to take their hands and pull silt and push it into baskets and put it on their backs and walk to where the land was so rocky and spread this, the silt down on the land so they could get 2.5 to 3 inches of rich dirt in which to grow, with which to grow enough vegetables to feed a very small family. And if they could ask, come and face you and say, so you are it. You are it. You are what we paid all of that for. How are you? What are you doing? There's an African statement which is, the trouble for the thief is not how to steal the chief's bugle, but where to blow it. Given that you've got it, what are you doing with it? What can you do? Indeed, what can you do? You have this love, those sacrifices, and what will you do? Spit upon those graves? Is that it? Then I'm afraid that that is suicidal. I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood and human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut along the Congo and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids high above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom grow all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers, and my soul has grown deep like the rivers. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Thank you. This, I suppose, next to last poem is a poem about the phenomenal quality of women. Now, I understand that men are also phenomenal because I know that nature abhors imbalance, will not deal with it very long. And if any species gets out of balance, then it will soon join the other 98% of species which have lived upon this little planet and which are now extinct. So if we are really out of balance, then we are headed on the way out anyway. But I believe that men are phenomenal. It's just that, gentlemen, you have to write your own poem. You know what I mean? Pretty women wonder where my secret lies. I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion model size. When I try to tell them, they think I'm telling lies. I say it's in the reach of my arms. It's in the span of my hips. It's in the stride of my step. It's in the curl of my lips. I'm a woman, phenomenally. Phenomenal woman, that's me. I walk into a room just as cool as you please. And to a man, the fellows stand. I fall down on their knees. And then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say, it's the fire in my eyes. It's the flash of my teeth. It's the swing in my waist. It's the joy in my feet. Men themselves have wondered what they see in me. They try so much, but they can't touch my inner mystery. When I try to show them, they say they still can't see. And now you understand just why my head's not bowed. I don't shout or jump about or have to talk too loud. When you see me walking, it ought to make you proud. I say, it's in the arch of my back. It's in the bend of my hair. It's in the palm of my hands. It's in the need for my care, because I'm a woman, phenomenally. Phenomenal woman, that's you. there is that thing in the human spirit which will not be dumbed down even by death. All of us, if we live more than a year, or probably less, knows what it feels like, knows how it feels to sleep with anguish. Some of us know what it's like to sleep with pain, with loss, fear, insecurity, self-loathing, grief. And yet, we get up after sleeping with those vicissitudes lumping in our pillows. We get up, shower, brush our teeth, put our clothes on and go out and say, good morning. Now that thing, that resistance to the pressure to push one down is the thing that is inspiring to me. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom just because I walk like I got oil wells pumping in my living room? Just like moons and like suns with the certainty of tides, just like hope springing high, still I rise. Oh, did you want to see me broken? Bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops weakened by my soulful cries. Does my sassiness upset you? Don't take it so hard just because I laugh. Like I've got gold mines digging in my own backyard. You may shoot me with your words. You may cut me with your lies. You may kill me with your hatefulness. But just like life, I'll rise. Does my sexiness offend you? Oh, does it come as a surprise that I dance like I've got diamonds at the meeting of my thighs? Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean leaping wide, welling and swelling. I bear in the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear, I rise into a daybreak that's wondrously clear. I rise, bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave. I am the hope and the dream of the slave, and so I rise. Ladies and gentlemen, I would, as it is said, entertain questions. I hope you won't hesitate to ask questions, because I've been known to answer some I didn't even understand. So. Don't hesitate. I'm interested in a number of things. I'm interested in film. I have a new film, which is a movie, NBC Movie of the Week, which I've written and co-produced, and it represents the first time any studio or network has risked $1.5 million in a black woman's hands. It's called Sisters. It's done. It's finished. It premiered in New York Tuesday night. Stars Diane Carroll, Rosalind Cash, Irene Cara, Paul Winfield, Robert Hooks, and Dick Anthony Williams. Lived in Africa for many years. I have a son and a grandson who is without, fortunately, I don't have to exaggerate, he is the most beautiful child in the world, I mean, and wonderful and intelligent and charming and kind. Many things, I mean, ask me, please. Yes, I've lived in Africa many years. I lived in Egypt for 2 years and in Ghana for 4 years. Well, I'm not encouraged by my old hope of having a nearly nationalized art program. I'm not encouraged. I am on that National Endowment of the Arts. I'm one of those. I just accepted the appointment about 2 months before the election. Now I'm sorry, but you know, courage is the most important of all the virtues, so I have to go there courageously and take the whipping. I think that what it means is that black artists and female artists and it's very important that Asian, Hispanic artists, Appalachian artists who will get no help, you start off with that in your mind, that you will get no help, that it's going to be even more work on your plate. You'll have to work harder. And if you are going to be artists, if that is your dream, you must know that it is unrelenting work. You have a lifetime of hard work ahead. It can be gratifying, and you can reap a lot of financial and material benefits, or you might not. But you're going to have to work very, very hard. Yes, I have a new book finished. It will be out in October. It's the fourth in the autobiographical series. It's called The Heart of a Woman. I'm not sure. I wasn't pleased with I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, although I wrote the script. But I didn't get to direct it, and I wasn't pleased with that. So unless I can have more control, I shan't, I don't think. The next one is a very heavy book, Gathered Together in My Name. And it can easily be melodramatic, you know, very easily. It has all the things in it that could be pounced upon by a sensationalist director. And I'm the first black female director in Hollywood, so, and I'm, you know, I have a few films. So I think that's the only way I would consider it, is if I could direct it. Or another woman, if I could find her. Lee Grant is marvelous, you know. She has a new film, which, it's from Tilly Olson's book, Tell Me a Riddle. A new film, when it comes, by all means see it. By all means see it, you'll be pleased. Men and women, you'll be pleased with it. Well, I had an unfortunate experience when I was 7 and a half, which I wrote about in I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. I was raped at 7 and a half. And the man was killed after I said who did it. And I figured that my words, the actual sound of my voice, killed the man. That was the connection I made. So I became what was known as a volunteer mute for almost 5 years, till I was almost 13. I didn't speak. But I read. And I memorized things I didn't understand. I memorized Poe, Edgar Allan Poe, and Paul Laurence Dunbar, because I loved the rhythms. And I memorized a lot of Shakespeare during that time. I lived in this little town in Arkansas, and everyone in town knew that I was so afflicted. I was Mrs. Henderson's granddaughter who couldn't talk. So I just read. And I loved words, and I loved the sound of the human voice, and I still do. It's the most beautiful instrument, the human voice. I've never heard an ugly one. That love of the sound is what I credit for learning languages, and I speak a number of them. It's because I really like to hear human beings. So if a human being goes ding 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 ding, I say, "Hey, what was that? That's fantastic. Do that again." And then I try to imitate it. I think hell for me would be never hearing another human voice. For a long time, I think, though, I could remember them. All right. In, I suppose, all of Europe, all of the European countries I have visited, and lived in Ghana for 4 years, and in Egypt for 2. The Soviet Union. My books are translated into most European languages, and I speak a number of languages. So that immediately opens a door, you see. I went to Sweden in 1972 and took a course in cinematography in Sweden, in Swedish. And this year I went back, this past year I've been back 3 times because Swedish television did a retrospective of all the films I've either written or directed or and or produced, or any of those combinations thereof. Because I respect the people, I don't go to a country any more than I would come here and start telling you in Poughkeepsie what you should do about the snow on the, I have respect. So when I go to a country, I try to learn the language enough to make me able to say thank you and how do you do and just some small communication. And I have been treated very, very well. Much better, in fact, in many cases than I was treated in the country where I really belong, or one of the places I belong, in any case. It's impossible to have a film retrospective of my work in the United States, but there I have had one in Sweden. The place I felt most comfortable was Ghana. That was for a number of reasons. It was a wonderful feeling to be in a country where everybody is black. It's an amazing feeling, where maybe 2% are non-black, or 3%. For the first time, the people, the policemen and policewomen and the pilots in the planes and the bank tellers and the bank managers and the post office, everybody's black. And it's an, for a black American, it is an amazing feeling. You just don't quite know what to do with yourself. You pass the parliament, and all the members of parliament are black, men and women, choosing and deciding and arguing over the future of their country. And it just boggles the mind. And it's incredible, an incredible experience for whites, Americans, to experience. Because when they go, for the first time, they understand how we feel in the United States. Because everywhere they see, everybody looks different than they do. Speak differently, walk differently. So it's an experience that one should certainly give oneself. I think that's about all I can say about it, unless you have another specific. Well, thank you. It would mean that the film societies would take me seriously as a filmmaker. And to take a black woman, seriously as a filmmaker, the time has not come for that. I'm pressing on the door. You understand? I'm on the board of trustees of the American Film Institute. I don't take no from anyone. Never. So I'm on that door. I'm on the board. The other people on the board are the president of CBS, the president of NBC, the president of 20th Century Fox, the president, and me. So I'm steady on the case. You understand? And in the last 3 years, I've been able to get 3 black women and 2 young black men into the directors and producers program at the American Film Institute. Because if I have any value at all to you, it's because I know a little bit. And I'm 52 years old. I have been here some time, making no arrangements to leave soon either. So if I have any value, it's to open that door with my foot and keep that door open up to my hip and let people step over there and get through. You understand? So it means that one has to be very, very good. I can't wing it. I can't shuck. I have to really know what I'm talking about. And it was such an unusual thing 2 years ago when NBC and Fox got $1.5 million together and put it in my hand. But it was only because there was a young black man named Peter Andrews, who was then vice president at Fox, who turned it toward me so that I could be the first black female producer. But racism is no plaything. It exists on every level in this country. So whatever I want to do, I know that I have to be 10 times better. I know that. I have to pile up my achievements that high if I'm going to compete with a white who has his or hers that high. I know that. That does not make me bitter. The reason for that is that bitterness is corrosive. It's like cancer. It eats upon the host. I'm angry, yes. Anger is healthy. You can burn it up. Burn it out. Do something about it. Do something. Go to work. So I work very hard. Laugh as much as possible, too. Yes, please. I must say I have not seen Fort Apache, and as a responsible person, I cannot speak about the film, although I read, I think, all the reviews, but I have not seen it. And I know that there is a groundswell of anger in the black community and in the Hispanic community. And no doubt, once I see it, I will add my protest. I do already, but I mean, I will be able to speak out about it. But I feel that in order to be responsible, I must not speak about that I do not absolutely know about, you know? Especially to young folks. I mean, if, you know, you and I were sitting with a glass of wine, I might. Yes, sir, I'm coming. Yes, sir. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I think about it. I think that it's very important that we not over adjectize. I think that that we must not say that if they keep killing off our children, we'll have nothing to look forward to. It's a terrible thing. One child killed is a terrible thing, and 20 is devastating. It is not, we can't say that we will have nothing to look forward to. You understand? We have children. Mind you, I'm not taking anything from the devastation, but I think we should watch our words very carefully. Very carefully. We can send young people into panic. Very important. I know some lecturers who would respond to that hot and heavy. But I also know that many of those people from the late 60s through the 70s were the people who went in and talked to black students and said, get and don't and do. And the next day, those same lecturers were on planes going first class to Puerto Rico, sitting with Mai Tais in front of a pool, while these young people were risking their lives, scholastic and physical lives. So I'm very careful. Very. Every word, I really look for it. You see, it's too easy that to use tender and inflame. There are things we can do, and I think that all the young people should be aware constantly. We should have a hookup with Atlanta. We should, those of us who can afford to go, should go. Those of us who cannot afford to go should have all the news, not just the AP and UPI and Reuters. I don't mean that. I mean the black news, because we do have a black news system. We should have that. We should see if that trend ever begins anywhere else. We should be sending money to enlarge that investigative research and search party. We should be doing that. We should be collecting money right here. That's not a bad thing. You see? But it's so hot, it's so seductive and intoxicating and frightful that it's hard not to break down and cry and speak before one deliberates. You see, there's a statement made by John Donne in the 16th century, which he said, "Ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee." That was at a time when people used to lean out the window when anybody had died and there was a funeral, they'd toll the bell. People would lean out the window and ask, "Who is the bell tolling for? For whom the bell tolls?" He says, "Ask not, because it tolls for thee." He goes on to say, "The death of every human being diminishes me." And when white Americans can really feel that, really feel that, we might be able to make this country more than it is today, which is these yet-to-be United States. The Sisters, it's called, and it's to be on in May, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of hoopla about it. I hope there'll be hoopla. Yes, if we don't, yes, absolutely. If we don't fight to hold it. If we don't, we really must be very strong. Nothing is gained unless it's secure. We really must. We must stop allowing the young people to think that everything is, like they don't have anything to do. We are in precarious times. Black Americans are in precarious times and will be for the next 10 years or so. We can lose the small gains we made or seem to have made in the 60s. We must be very serious, apply ourselves. Don't give up anything. Try to get more. Try to get more children in school. Try to encourage them to learn. Encourage them to make use of this being in an institution of higher education. Encourage them. Encourage them. We must do that. And all of us must do it. I don't mean those formal teachers or formal students. I mean all of us. It's very serious. We are about to face something very, very serious. I don't like to leave on such a dire note, but I know that there's a statement which is, since life is our most precious gift, and since it is given to us to live but once, let us so live that we will not regret years of useless virtue. And in dying, we can say, all my conscious life and energies have been dedicated to the most noble cause in the world, the liberation of the human spirit. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.